Episode 11, Summary with Brian Wood. This is Declassified. So, episode 1, Brian Wood, that got released on the 19th of June. First one in, mate. How's it gone? How's it been?
Yeah, it's been good, been busy. It's nice to be back.
Yeah.
Thanks for getting me back to summarise. It means a lot to me, and I know it means a lot to you. Clearly, that's why you're taking this on. But the feedback that I've had, and I know that you've had a lot of feedback as well on all of the podcasts, ranging from you've really helped me, you've made me kind of take that initial step to go and seek some help and some support. Some of them has been game-changing, which is, it's been humbling, really. And I know that's kind of why you've really pushed this. And yeah, I was just kind of surprised that my story, along with the others, clearly, had a lot of traction, had a lot of interest, and the feedback has been pretty special.
I think, you know, initially, and this is a genuine, I'm not doing any BS, I didn't have a clue how many people would listen to anything or listen to it, because especially, you know, it's an hour long, pretty much, 55 minutes average, and I had literally no idea that we'd get so many listeners. And I don't know if you remember, but I was like, with you, I was texting you on the day of release, and it was like, oh, we're at 50, we're at 80. I was like, oh, like, that's unreal. Like, I thought I was going to get 25 or something like that, you know, for the full week. I didn't have a clue. I had no expectation whatsoever. I just knew that this needed to go out so we could have that body of work and people could keep referring back to it. I think you're at about 6,000 now, or just less. Oh, yeah, about 6,000. Which is phenomenal, really, when you look at it, like 6,000, pretty much 6,000 hours of people consuming you. I know some people have probably, you know, started it and didn't finish it, but really, if we look at it from that point of view.
Well, I hope they started it and finished it.
Yeah.
Surely it can't have been that boring.
I've not known anyone who's started it and not gone right the way through on any of the
episodes. I mean, it is an hour's a long period to take out your day, but it does suit the commute. It does suit someone's lunch break. Podcasts are really current at the moment. And yeah, it's a great way to kind of release content.
Yeah. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed your story. And what people might not be aware of, we recorded it on, I think, something like the Monday. And then I got a call off Beth, who produces the program, the episodes, the podcast. And she was like, well, how much do you want me to get involved with this? And I was like, you go for it, because I don't know anything. You just give me whatever you've got, good or bad. And she was like, it's good, but I think we're not being specific on some of the narratives around Brian's story. So we went away, or I went away, then just kind of rejigged it. You were very kind enough to come back in. I think it was the Friday. We'd gone for a few beers the Thursday night. I think getting to know each other was really good as well, because we didn't really talk too much about the show, but about family life and other bits and pieces. And that really made for a solid episode, I thought. And just to know where we were going in that direction. And like you said, I didn't know anything. Didn't know what we were doing. So Beth's input was really valuable to how then we progressed on the future episodes. And because there was so much more around your story, I know the book's coming. When's the book out?
It's 21st of Feb next year.
Pre-order now.
Absolutely.
Did you... By doing the book, did you get a lot out of you? Because obviously you've gone through therapy and all the rest of it, which we heard in the podcast. But there's loads more around your story than what was on that. And did you find the book therapeutic?
Yeah, absolutely. It shut a lot of chapters off, which had been kind of, well, which had been open. And but it's also had a double-edged effect, really, because doing the book has then released a whole... a different side of emotions that I hadn't dwelled on, hadn't thought of for a long time, and after visiting them a number of times, it kind of it re-released a few things which I've kind of had to step up and deal with
emotionally.
I mean, it's been difficult because yes, I've had therapy, yes, you know, I was brave enough to kind of knock on that door to go and get my headspace looked at, but when you go through the therapy cycle, and everyone has who has done that has a different kind of method of kind of negotiating that journey. But with me, it was quite a few different things which were hanging over my headspace, and then would focus on one, then transition to another, or focus on another one, and it would kind of, we wouldn't really get massively into over detail on the issues which were causing me a little bit of a problem. But so when I was doing the book, I was then really getting drawn into these different issues that I had had, but because I was looking at them, I was kind of dissecting each one because I was really getting involved in the detail of it.
Yeah.
And then I'll go to bed, and then sure enough, I couldn't sleep because of the stuff that I'd been really focused on and really opened up again. So I really had to kind of go back to having to deal with that, having to cope with that, and what mechanisms I needed to kind of grab again, because I'd been all right, you know, till doing the book. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely therapy. It shut a lot of chapters, but it also kind of resurfaced a lot of emotions that...
Right, but it's also opened a lot of opportunity as well, hasn't it, for you? And we'll see that in the coming months, especially, if you know, on social media and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it's an exciting time at the moment. I can't give too much away, but there's a number of projects ongoing, the book being one of them. Yeah, and I'm glad I've had the opportunity to do the book. I think it will open a lot of eyes, the way the whole inquiry went and the betrayal in detail on how I was feeling, the lack of support, the back turning, the distance that was created.
I think it's gonna teach a lot. Oh, it's gonna provide a lot of value and a lot of lessons for a lot of people.
Yeah,
especially if you can pull things out of it.
Look, I'm not here to kind of smash the government, and I haven't done that in my book. What I've done is I've highlighted facts, and I've gone into detail on how I felt betrayed and double-crossed when, you know, yes, I chose to sign up, like so many people do, to go and serve this great nation, patriotic, passionate, and I wanted to make a difference. I don't choose to go to war. War's brutal. And those who disagree, well, I wouldn't mind having an in-depth conversation with them individuals.
But we're seeing that now, aren't we, with Northern Ireland and whatnot. That's a different side of things. But that's, certainly a different episode. And I'm not sure how many guys will come forward to speak about that now, and I don't blame them. But that's why your episode's so important. And then the book as well, especially if people are going through that Northern Ireland thing now. Mm. And I didn't know, actually, one of our guys who works with us, he was part of that inquiry as well, ex-Royal
Marine. Yeah, Sweden inquiry.
Yeah, former Royal Marine lad who was in one of the prisons, got dragged through that as well for a little bit. And so that affected a lot of people as well, didn't it, either directly or indirectly?
Yeah.
And it's amazing what a conversation can do. I can't remember if I spoke about it before, but, like, things happen. Like, me and you first met through someone, and then we had although we was on LinkedIn and all that, but we had a simple conversation in a coffee shop, you know, not far away from where we're sat now, and I didn't know what your story was, but then it was the one that kind of catapulted me and maybe prompted me really into starting this podcast and getting these conversations out, because so much value can be taken from each episode, especially what we've done so far. So I just think, a simple conversation can lead to so much. And by having either reading it or listening to these stories, it's such a big deal. And I got all emotional now. But, you know, but thanks, mate, for being the first one, because that gave me one credibility and almost kind of cut my teeth really early on as well. I still don't know what I'm doing, but it's just, I just think, can we provide value to the person who's sat down with me, and can we provide tons more value and guidance and support for everyone else? And you certainly did that, and that's why it is by far the most listened to the most listened to episode. Episode 2, Terry Brazier. What was your general kind of thoughts on Terry?
Terry's a great guy with great ambition and focus, and you know, the sport that he's in, kind of you need that. A lot of the things that I listen to, I think, is still raw. I think, and obviously this is just my opinion. I don't know.
Kind of what Terry's state of mind is. This is your opinion from listening to a podcast.
Yeah, and I hope he doesn't get upset by it. But listening to it, I think he's got a lot of underlying issues. And yeah, I know he kind of knows maybe that he's still got issues. And you know, you can only do so much. And you can only take a horse to water, but you can't kind of make it drink. I know it's a cliche saying, but you know, I don't know how. Everyone's different. I get it. How he uses kind of his headspace and keeps a kind of level headed within that sport, knowing kind of what's over and the dark cloud which continues over his head is a testament to him. And you know, yeah, he's a super resilient guy.
Yeah, he's been through it actually since the podcast, because it opened up a lot of, like what you said a couple of minutes ago, up a lot of wounds for him. And I know he's battled since, but this is the kind of character this man is. He knew that was going to happen. Like, he knew he was going to suffer a little bit afterwards, and he's actually probably suffered a little bit more than he thought, because of a bit of injury and all this. And he was 2 days out from that whale turtle shot, and he was skinny and hungry, and like physically hungry. I'm talking about, you know, mask weight cut. Yeah. Did not want to be traipsing into London, central London, to do a podcast at 7 a.m. But he knew by getting his story out would potentially help one other person. And then he put the, because his title shot was on ITV, and well, he won that title, and he had declassified all over his T-shirts and all over his banners and all the rest of it. And then actually them two episodes, yours and then Terry's the week after, was the two episodes that put us into the top 100 chart across the country for 2 days. So we spent 2 days in the top 100, which I was like, oh, is that good? Is that any good? and apparently it's really good. Like, it's really good, because there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts on that chart, and we was in there. And yeah, so it got out to a lot of people, both your stories. And we spoke about post-traumatic growth in those as well, as the stresses and kind of injury from trauma. And I think that was really testament to that specific episode. And people keep messaging me about it as well, about how Terry was an example of that growth. But he didn't at that point, like me and many others, didn't realise it was a memory problem and not so much a mental health problem. And I think that's when this stigma's got to change around it, where if you've been in trauma, just understanding that it's your memory, and then you have to file the memory away properly and correctly, and you yourself, you've been through lots of treatment. And how, so from knocking on the door, because you went twice to knock on the door, and knocked on it the second time, what happened then after that? Was it as scary as people would have imagined?
Look, therapy? I'm a dude that had spent, you know, at that time 15 years in an all-male organisation. I was a leader, commander and a decision maker. I loved inspiring my men around me. I would go through the compound first, I would go into doors first, as a lot of commanders would do, because you lead by example. To then all of a sudden having an issue with my headspace, didn't really know what to do, didn't know how to manage it, just thought I would just do what I thought was right, would just kind of hide it all away and then just punch it out. And to the point that I plucked up enough courage, went, didn't commit. And yeah, in the military, when you commit, you roll with it. But I didn't. I kind of hesitated, and then the next time I knocked on the door and kind of just quickly got it off my chest. I just was so
Who did you speak to
desperate.
The first time?
One of the commandant of the Royal Marines, because I was at Lympston when I did it. So I went to
see... Used to one of these training
Yeah, I mean, I, sp- I spoke to another fellow colour sergeant when we were marking a movement order at Caerwent, and we kind of just had a conversation.
What does that mean? Is that like operation? Is that, you're doing some training work?
Yeah, I mean, I was...
You just mean you had a trap?
Yeah, I was instructing the Royal Marines corporals to become sergeants, and we were in a kind of the urban phase of the operations where they go away on exercise and kind of... So we got a little bit of time to kind of mark other work that they've been doing throughout the course. So we're there marking it through the night, different pieces of work, and we just kind of got chatted, and he had a really, really tough Afghan tour with 4-5 Commando. Opened up to me about it. They had a mass casualty incident. There was a lot of kind of carnage, disorganized chaos. And he just kind of told me that he'd done the same. He'd gone out, he'd opened up, he'd reached out for help. And it kind of inspired me to think someone who I class as such a good operator, you know, was kind of sergeant in 4-5 when it all happened. And he still had the nuts to go and knock on that door, which massively did inspire me. So then I kind of got chatting to him, blurred a load of stuff out, which was like that raw, it seemed like yesterday. And he's like, you need to go and get some therapy, and you need to go and see the commandant. He'll then give you a steer, a bit of direction, and then he'll then engage you with a therapist, basically.
Could you have that support then, that conversation? You know what I mean?
Like, just talking. I mean, it's absolutely.
And with someone who you trusted, though.
Yeah.
Which is probably the main thing. You trusted this guy.
Yeah, I did. I trusted him. I respected him. And seeing the instructor that he was very razor sharp and on it. And that kind of, I bought off that as well. And I don't know, it was just that moment. It just created to then realise, actually, it's okay to go and do that.
I mean, you know, go back to Terry there. He's done all the hard stuff. He just needs to... and I've not spoken to him or messaged him for a couple of weeks, so he might be going through it now, but I know he was better last time I spoke to him, and he's looking forward to, you know, to get back training and fighting again, and actually had to have a shoulder op, which didn't help him, you know, and his you know, post kind of podcast and then fight. But no, I'll try update with Terry. He's, you know, great bloke, absolutely great, and he's got a very good contract with a big American promotion.
Yeah.
So he's kind of heading up. Episode 3, Phil Campion. So Phil was actually the second one we did. So we recorded Phil second, and then the Terry one came up. And then so we put Phil in third. What did you think of the episode? And because you know Phil, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I really like the guy.
He's an awesome
bloke.
He tells it as he sees it. Yeah. Very honest. You ask him a question, you'll get the answer, instead of kind of having a thinking about whether it's going to be politically right or not. There's no grey areas. Yeah. You see him.
It makes so much sense, though. It's not like the PC thing. It's actually the stuff he says. He's very logical.
The stuff he says is what everyone's thinking. But nowadays, is too scared to kind of say what he is thinking and what he says. I mean, he just, straight down the line. You ask him a question, he'll tell you.
He's very articulate in his own...
Absolutely. He's like, he sits around that table on the pledge.
Yeah.
You know, so if he's not articulate, if he's not aware of his current affairs or so on and so forth, he isn't going to be on a board or on around the table with them from the pledge. So, yeah, he's a good guy. And he was a former PWRR soldier.
I know, mate. He was getting to the point at this time where it was like, is this going to be the PWRR podcast? No, and actually, it developed a bit more, so but I'm going to put a cap on it now.
Yeah, you should do. But yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of things going on, maybe too much. I bumped into him and we went for some coffee maybe 2 weeks ago. And he's got a number of different projects on. He's got the Remembrance Rumble 3 happening on
the 9th of November. Yeah.
Day after my birthday. Yeah. So he's got that.
Going?
I can't because I'm away. Lucy's booked a trip for Lucy and I. and I'm gutted because I haven't been to one yet. I've just been so busy. But with all that becomes, yeah, organisation and promoting, and he's doing it kind of self.
And he'll do everything for everyone else as well.
Yeah, of course. He doesn't know how to say no.
So this podcast was, I think we'd released yours, and it was like last minute, the day before, I was scrambling to get someone else on.
Yeah.
Because no one had heard of it, nothing. And I got someone put us in touch, and then he said yes. And then we met up about 6:30 in the morning outside, and he'd had a function the night before, like a family function, and I was like, "Oh shit, he's hungover," and he was just like someone to think, and right, you know, it was a family function, and it like someone had flicked a switch, and he was like, "Awesome,"
yeah,
during it, full of it, really well, you know, described everything really well, loved it, had a lot of fun with Phil, and I'm sure I'll see him again soon. But his campaign, you know, that Okay to Say as well, and if it can come from a big former SAS guy, then you know, it goes back to that initial.
Yeah, the thing is, mate, it's real. You can't shy away from the problem. I mean, you know, we haven't got it right as a military organisation. I don't think the government's trying. I think they can do more. But the bottom line is, you can have the best support wellness centres in the world. You can invest millions of pounds in these, right? And we have got a few around. But if you're not going to admit and take the first step by understanding there's an issue, then taking the second step and reaching out, then them centres and them wellness hubs and them other things which are there to help aren't going to get used, because we're not being brave enough to talk about it. We're not being brave enough to admit it. That's just as important, clearly, or even more important than having all these great multi-million pound centres set up.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because you said admit there, and if you remember when we came into LBC and was with James O'Brien.
Yeah, he said he pulled himself, didn't he, for saying admit. He said there's nothing to admit. I mean,
it's a language change.
Yeah, it is a language change. And yeah, clearly I was using the same language as
And by the way, I don't think this would be happening if it weren't for James as well, because he's been a huge supporter. His values are top notch.
Yeah.
He's been a massive supporter of this. So, like, massive respect to him as well.
I mean, going back to Big Phil, he's a tremendous man. He's there to lend a hand. He was on the search as well for Danny Johnston. We both turned up at Butser Hill on the South Downs and conducted a search for Danny Johnston. And he, that's the type of guy he is. And yeah, needs to maybe know when to say no.
Yeah.
But that's kind of down to him to figure that out. But yeah, great guy.
So episode 4, Dr. Walter Boozer Teal. And this was the one for me. I'll let you go with this because I'll speak in a sec. But what was your thoughts on Walter?
Yeah, some of the things that I'd heard him talk about with the whole memory side of things opened my eyes up, with it being a thought, a memory thought, and not an illness really. And I've not looked at it like that before. I've not studied it as he explained it. And to be honest, I was just mesmerized on his background, where he'd come from, how clued up he was, and where he is now, with at the top end of, was it SAFR?
No, it's combat stress.
Combat stress.
Yeah. He's one bloke that cares.
Yeah.
His time, professional time, is very precious, and I'd known it a little bit before, but he just wanted to help. He just wants to help veterans. That's all he says. I'm just here to help someone. I'm just, if I can do it, then I can help. And that one has definitely, definitely helped. There was something I was just about to say, then I forgot what it was. It'll come to me in a minute. But yeah, you look at veterans and members of the armed forces now and first responders like ambulance crews and paramedics and firefighters and police. And there's a reason why there's a lot of these people with post-traumatic stress. And it's not something we should... This is my opinion, by the way. Again, this is my opinion on it and what I've seen on Twitter and all this kind of stuff, where people go, we should be very... These are other people say, we should be very careful about labelling this as PTSD. But actually, if you've had 20 years of conflict, and you look at yourself, how much conflict you've been involved, how much trauma you've seen and been involved with, well, there's no fucking wonder that there's guys and girls out there that have got bad memory problems.
Yeah.
And you look at the ambulance crews that go around London, there's no wonder why the Royal Foundation and the Heads Together campaign are putting, an onus on veteran and first responders.
Yeah.
Because these are some of the strongest people of our society are also putting themselves in the line where they're going to face trauma, really. And I didn't know this until he said, I think it was after, they only put disorder, because people go, it's not a disorder. And it's not a disorder, it's a natural occurrence in the brain. But they only put disorder on it for medical funding. So that they need to put that disorder on so the NHS and other people will fund them.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, and that's, and that's the beauty of having people like him come on. And yes, his time is, precious, but so is his knowledge. And him coming out and coming onto the podcast and talking through and actually analysing it for people listening who are also going through it, and they might have not even had opened up yet, but listening to him and the detail that he's gone into, how he's analysed it, how he's articulated it to the audience was sublime.
It was, mate. And it's I think that's the second most listened to, I think, apart from yours. I think it's yours. And it's not a competition, but it goes to show that people aren't just after war stories. They're not after people fixing bayonets or running out of the back of tanks or whatever. They're actually interested in the other aspects of our military community.
I think it's more important, if I'm honest. The last 15...
I do.
The last 15... Look, I'm a realist. I've just got a narrative. Is the same as so many other people out there who have been into theatre the last 15 years, which is pretty much thousands of people. They'll have their own, fighting stories. So it doesn't make them any different to me, really. I mean, the intriguing thing is kind of the aftermath, really. Yes, it was close and personal. It was clearing positions. It was, it was proper close and personal.
Yeah.
As in capturing enemy, detained and all that sort of stuff. Maybe that's a little bit different. But, I mean, a two-way engagement, an overwhelming ride of violence. People have had it all over the place. And I'm just one of the normal guys who have been involved. So I get that. The important side of it, and the more important side of it, is the stuff with Walter and Sean Jones as well, going into, in detail, his issues and breaking silence as well.
Yeah, we'll come on to Sean in a minute, because this was a really important episode. Episode 5, Simon Harmer. Simon is top, like everyone is, top quality bloke, and he's really overcoming adversity. So if you have not listened to his, Simon's a double amputee, one above the knee, one below the knee, lost a testicle as well. And when we really go into depth things, and we were speaking actually more before when we met up about things like fertility and whatnot as well, because that's an issue that a lot of the guys are faced. But just how he has to plan everything. So when he comes up to do the podcast, he had to plan every single step of the way. There's
it's
a
like
lot.
A seven-phase operation.
Yeah,
it?
Mate, honestly. It's not just like jumping on a tube. Every day. And he's positive. And I thought I'd got the podcast wrong. Like, I don't know why. I just came away from that. The only one I thought, I don't think I did him any justice. I don't think I got what I needed to get out of that, especially the first half. And then I listened back to it. I think it was that evening, like the raw recording of it. And the second or the last 30 minutes, I was like, he has he has done his self-justice. Like, I didn't need to do anything. He just really explained and talked about things he'd never spoken about as well. And I think at that point, he felt that he was in a safe environment as well, where he could trust me and trust Beth as well to produce something for him that will help him in the future and certainly help others. But what did... Because you know guys who've...
Yeah. I actually met Simon for the first time last week or the week.
Oh, yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Just in the Union Jack Club. I was on my way home. He flashed up on Twitter that he's there, got a bit of time. Jordan was also there.
Oh, yeah.
So I quickly flew in there and met him. I mean, it was the right thing to do. He was there. I have to go past there to get to my main line's Waterloo. So I should be doing that. I should make an effort and go and meet Jordan for the first time and also Simon. And just a good dude. I mean, smiling from ear to ear.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, he's been taking these tablets and he's not with it at the moment because he's just had some kind of pains and stuff that he's had to kind of jump on these tablets. But he was going to go and do something for architects on building, this house, but for disabled individuals with, they're factoring their limbs, the way he walks, the barristers and all that sort of stuff. And he's like, I'm not even with it. I'm high as a kite. I'm like flat out.
Mate, when he came into the studio to do it, he came in, he was like, oh, my leg's falling off. I was like, all right. I said, should we get that sorted out? And he's like, oh, no, I'll be all right. I'll sort it out after. Turns out he's in Leicester Square splitting up a fight between, I don't know who it was, like two drunks or whatever. And he's splitting up a fight and his leg falls off. Anyway, it was, he'll find that funny. Because it was funny.
No, I mean, what a guy and what a great, inspiration for the outlook on life when he is evolving through adversity and like you say, every day is difficult. I know that because I'm very close to a fellow former soldier, PWRR, Jay Baldwin, who lost both legs above the knee. And I went on a cycling journey with him. We cycled across America. 3,000 miles in 14 days, done it as a relay. And I shared a bed with him. So I was forever looking after his admin. He'll kind of come in and want to debate this, but I looked after his admin and he had these stupid Allen keys, which would do my nut right in. Because actually, before I go into that, he was having a real, when he was on his recovery and he had his sockets, he was having a real issue with the sockets. Really a tough time. And
sorry, elaborate on that. What do you mean? Sockets?
Yes. So, when they go into their headley court, they do their rehab, they get these kind of their legs.
Oh, like a frame.
Yeah, they're called sockets.
Yeah, all right. Okay, sorry.
But he was having a real issue with it, where his femur had kind of taken a blast. It wasn't, I'm not too sure the technicality of it, but he was having issues. It was just the scarring, the blisters. Every day was a real chore, and it was just getting him, it was degrading him, it was getting him down, and he was kind of spiraling out down a slippery slope. And I got a phone call one day, and I was head of fundraising for my regimental benevolent fund at this point. I just got out, we had a conversation with a few people, didn't want to lose me from the regiment, so they asked if I would take on this role, which I did. Anyway, he phoned, said, I've heard of some pioneering surgery, it's called osseointegration, and it's out in Australia. I was like, okay. He said, but it's like 90,000. I said, can I ring you back in an hour? He said, yeah. I said, right. Spoke to a few people, Matt Mayer being one of them, who was a former commanding officer and sits on the board on the Benevolent Fund. Told him, had this conversation with Jay. He's really down, a bit depressed. He's struggling. We should do something about it. And that conversation escalated. The board had a meeting. It was agreed. So, we managed to send him off to Australia with a friend to go and get this surgery. And 100%, it's been a game changer. It's been a real life.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
Chance for him, yeah. And it's really incredible that he can now go and play golf.
Mate, it's incredible. You know what the one thing is that he reached out for help.
Yeah.
That's the incredible thing. Because it could be, you know, there's just that's the last stage of interdependency where people appreciate that, you know, you can be dependent and take, you can be independent and do it yourself, or you can be interdependent and everyone works together to achieve something. That last thing, that help is when people are humble enough with no ego where they go, you know, I need a bit of fucking help.
This is what I said, you know, you can have all the best facilities in the world, but if you don't reach out to go and use these facilities, then they're going to be there empty. It's really important.
Simon's an example of that, working together, because he, and I believe, and you do, where our network's so important. And if someone reaches out to you, it's common courtesy, even if you can't do it, to say no, tell them to say no, or say yes, or give advice. And Simon's a good, you do it as well. If you can, we can help. And there's individuals within the military that need to use that and help use, you know, make introductions or just give a general advice or value or whatever as well, because it's so kind of bubbling over. The pot is bubbling over of knowledge and connections and network, where we just need to use it a little bit more. And a lot of people are, and they're doing very well.
2 seconds, and he bounced back onto that journey across America.
Oh, sorry, mate.
No, it's fine. So he's had this operation. It was a game changer for him. But to fix his leg, they have to tighten up with an Allen key. Oh, it destroyed me, this Allen key, because every single day he would lose it. And he calls me pig, right? He calls me pig face.
Why?
Just for banter. I don't know why. But he always has done.
And is that because you got pig face?
That's what he says, yeah. I was like, whatever, you lizard. But it's not pig face, it's Tin Herman. But anyway.
Beth, what do you think? Pig?
Whatever. No, so anyway, he's like, pig. I'm like, what's the matter, Joe? My Allen key. Anyway, first couple of days, I was like, it's not a problem. I've got a really helping buddy system and all that. You know, I help him out, like, gets on shoulders and does a little commando roll with his, like, stubs and that. Gets a banter. It's a beautiful thing. Day 5, pig. I'm like, knackered as well, because I've been on the bike cycling, pure mileage. What's up, Jay? Allen key. I see this Allen key? I'm going to go wild in a minute. So what I used to do, he had a load of Allen keys, loads of them. So I used to take some out of his wash bag and then put them in certain locations where I know where they were, because he would just use it, put it on the side, it would get knocked by something, and then there's me, shitty knickers, cutting about, trying to find these Allen keys. So yeah, I mean, we done it. It was an unbelievable life experience cycling through West Virginia. You know, Jay, he's obviously been through so much. Dogs came out from nowhere, bit him on the shoulder. We tried to bank around him, we were too late. We had a massive mass crash with the bikes and with his hand bike. The dog's there like a grizzly bear on his shoulder. He's like, get him off me. And I was like, oh, no way, I can't believe it. So then off, like, one of us threw the bike at the dog released and then ran off. And he was like that Balotelli footballer. He's like, why is it always me? Look at the state of me. I'm going home. He said, get me home. I'm going home now. I've had enough. But
yeah. When was that? That was a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, 3 years ago. Actually, this time 3 years ago, we were probably in Arizona.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's like on my timeline flicking up and the memories and stuff like that. So yeah, it's...
Well, I'm sure you'd rather be here with me.
It was incredible. But yeah, what a guy, and yeah, resilience and abundance.
So episode 6, Louise Fettigan. And this is one that I when I planned the kind of first 10 episodes, that this one needed to be in for me. And I'd met Louise before and we talked about it. And I joked to her, I said, oh, this conversation should be a podcast. And she really spoke about a lot of things she'd never spoken about, because she set the charity up, Little Troopers, which is there to help the children of service personnel. And generally, everyone wants to speak to her about that. But I wanted to know about what it was like to be essentially a career military wife, really. And I really enjoyed the episode. I know it was Beth's favourite in this first block of 10. What was your thoughts about that? The kind of story around it, and especially because you've got a wife yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I do quite a few speaking engagements now, and I was doing one maybe 6 months ago now, and I'd gone through kind of my narrative into the Q&A, and then someone asked me, how is your wife through that, and actually stopped me in my tracks and my thought process. I was like, because I'd never been asked that question before.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I never asked her, which is really selfish. Because what we don't appreciate is actually what they do and what they go through. And they're the unsung heroes. And I don't just say that. I mean, we go away, we switch off, mindset. We know what we've got to do. We know the mission statement. We know the intent. And we're around a group of people who are on the same mission. They're on their own. They maybe have a few friends and family. They've got kids, their worry, the heartache, and the day-to-day business that they have to conduct. I don't know if I could do it. Honestly, I do not know if I could stay at home, run a household, with my loved one being away, and
do everything else.
I mean, it's just now when someone said that to me, I was really disappointed in myself that I never thought of Lucy like that. Never asked her how she was doing during the Al Sweedy inquiry. Never asked her what it was like when she was getting trickle fed information when I was in hospital. Got flown from Alamara to Basra when Johnson Bahari's vehicle was hit and I was in the back with two AT-4 missiles going straight through the side. I never asked her. You know, I just kind of switched it off and just cracked on. She was my wife. Yeah. She'll be with me regardless.
Imagine that though, not knowing. You know some things smashed into you in hospital.
Honestly,
you don't know.
It
the stress.
It really affected me to think how uncaring was I.
Yeah.
You know, I just, yeah.
Someone who, a wife of someone who done one of the, a guest's wife of this podcast contacted me a couple of days ago and said, I've just listened to episode 6 and I've been crying. And not every episode that we do, not everyone's going to like every episode. This one was the one where that's had a massive impact on a lot of people. And quite often that the demographic that doesn't, like what you just said then, that people don't think about.
It's not only operations, you go away, it's exercises. But when you're going on exercise, it's not a week. You're going away for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Then you come back and people can label it saying, oh, well, they knew what they were getting into. Don't be naive. The bottom line is they love each other. They're a family. It doesn't matter. It's still going to hurt when you separate. You know, when you separate a family, it hurts. You miss them, and with like I said, with soldiers, they just switch off because they're around other people who are on the same mission. You're tuned in, and you're gone, and you're leaving them behind to kind of pick up the pieces and be resilient and get on with it.
I mean, talking about pick up the pieces, episode 7, Derek and Maria Hunt, and I mean, you could talk all day about this one. And I think if you haven't listened to it, you need to go listen to it. And if you don't listen to any of them, this one's the one. The only one up to that point where we edited, so we took 15 seconds out because the method of suicide was mentioned by Derek. And Beth went away and either spoke or did some research on with the Samaritans. The essentials of it are, if you put the method of suicide out there, it increases that suicide or people attempting that suicide, and that's what this wasn't about. Or at least it can increase it, and that's not what this was about. And I was with them the other week, actually. We went to this peace gala at, where was it? I was in the city near Waterloo, near Westminster, and I saw them there. And there were, especially Maria, she listened to this and she won't mind me saying it, but she was well out of her comfort zone. you know, it was we went to the reception and Lord Dannett was there and all the rest of it. And but I just went over to him and I was like, look, we're all here for you. Like, everyone's on your side here. And they're both passionate about making change. And we, you know, we look at veteran suicide, but it's not out there as much as the as current serving, those that are currently serving, and that narrative verdict instead of the suicide verdict that needs to be at least looked at. And they're passionate, and they're drivers in this now to raise more awareness, and they know. And then they spoke to Prince Harry at the interval, because it was like a gala thing, you know, like a concert. They spoke to Prince Harry at the interval, and again him and a few others, they're driving procedures and systems or all the rest of it, so that this can you know, that basically Nathan's story or his legacy will carry on, because these two are doing everything the right way. They're speaking at the top. That's where change is going to happen, and that's where they're doing it. And hopefully this episode gets to those influential people as well, because not these guys and girls can't speak to people for an hour, but they might be able to just listen to a podcast for an hour.
Absolutely. So brave as well. I mean, every time they speak, it's heartache, you know, and they're speaking every day. Yeah. They're pushing. They want to make difference. They want to make change. They want to get these procedures in place. They're going to the top. They're battling. And with that battle, it's constant reminder of heartache. Yeah. And, it's... Look, I've had, you know, been involved in a few issues myself with regards to, like, going on search parties for 24 hours, then having an issue in what should have been the quietest of tours, which was having Raffle take his own life in a tent opposite me, and kind of being,
of course,
initially on the scene.
That was in Iraq. When was that? 2011.
2009.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the tour was kind of the withdrawal. So everything was coming to a close. We were doing a couple of Operation Spartans to support the Special Forces on the Outer Cordon. Done a few operations on Leaf Island. And anyway, I mean, it should have been a quiet tour, which 99% of it was, yeah, until that morning where he decided to kind of end his life.
Yeah.
And it was just a really, well... Yeah, it just wasn't very nice. You know, that whole escapade was just a one big drama. And then, yeah, like I said, going and with Danny Johnston and trying to find him, and we were too late. And I think, you know, did we do enough? Could we have done more? And, yeah, you're always going to think like that when the worst happens.
It's sadly, it's going to keep going on.
Yeah. Most recently we've had another soldier from PWRR.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Another one?
Yeah. Yeah. Take his own life.
How old is he?
I reckon 26.
All right, so it's your generation.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Well, look, with you look at the 10 people we've... These first 10. Most of them are talking about it and happy to speak and whatnot. And if that, again, that conversation could lead to something else, then we've won. And... We know it is, so we are winning. Only a small amount, and there's a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot of good people that are doing a lot. Where are we at, mate? We are at episode 8. Sean Jones. You just talk, makes you knew him. You know him.
Yeah. PWRR. I mean, good guy. Really good guy. Back-to-back tours of Afghan. Was awarded the Military Cross for also fixing bayonets and taking it to the Taliban. And suffered later on. Kept all in house, similar to kind of me. but Sean might mind me saying this, how he broke his silence was wrong. He was probably encouraged, persuaded, and it was, in my opinion, the wrong way to go about doing that. He could have done that a lot better. He knows that now.
Yeah.
And I why doing these podcasts meant a lot to him, to kind of get the I wouldn't say the truth, but get his story out, how it should have been released.
Can I just interrupt you?
Yeah.
Because about a year ago, he was still, he was not psychologically doing very well at the time, and he was very angry. And it wasn't something we discussed on the podcast. And he won't mind you, because he was in a different place to what he's at now. Mm. And he when he came out, he went to, what was it? One of the rag papers, basically.
Yeah.
And they manipulated his words a little bit as well, and especially kind of the title headline and all the rest of it. And he didn't do himself justice on that, but he's making up for it now.
Definitely. No, and he will, he's on this expedition now.
Yeah.
You know, touring around Europe with a bunch of
yes,
veterans.
And that's exactly what it is. He's on a jolly.
He is on a jolly, and he is. You know, I see him on his Instagram stories now. He's starting to miss the family.
His
kids.
He's still about a month out as well, isn't he?
He's still got a long time.
Veterans in Action.
Yeah, he's still got a long time traveling, but that will be a life experience. But you know, it comes with things like that come with sacrifices, and his was kind of leaving the family behind for a while.
I really have a lot of time for him. You talk about unsung heroes. It's Amanda, his wife, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like your missus and some of the others, unsung heroes there. Episode 9, Jordan Wiley. Taller than I thought, better looking, more charisma than I thought. What a dick.
You got a man crush or what?
Yeah, he's just got everything, hasn't he? He's got everything going on, Jordan. Really good bloke. And he reached out to me and said, can I help in any way? And I've kind of, you know, followed him from afar for a while on social media, and I was like, you know what? That's what we need. We needed that. A little bit different, a little bit of a different episode, and someone coming at this from a different angle. And his approach to using influence and using the network and really explaining what he got from his military life. And maybe did do it initially, but then and certainly made up for it. But his take on things is great. I know you know him a little bit as well. What's your opinion on him as an individual when you meet him?
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's very intelligent, smart, knows where he wants to be, wants to give as much back as he can.
Yeah.
Not really interested in, I wouldn't say he's not interested, but business is a focus, but giving back is more of a focus to him.
Yeah.
And it's to be admired, really.
But it sits hand in hand for him. Yeah. He can't do one without the other. And he wants to be a role model to his daughter and all the rest of it. And he's absolutely, he's doing that. He's got a few things I'll talk about in a minute, actually. I'll talk about that in a second, what he's up to. Doing some good stuff, though. I think he's off to Afghanistan in a week or so.
Yeah, running dangerously.
Running dangerously is his project.
Running a marathon in Afghan.
Yeah.
It's
an organised event, that. That's an organised marathon. There's only a few internationals doing it. And he was telling me, I had breakfast with him, and he was telling me, like it's, they've had to charter a flight and some psych. Mate, he was like, what the fuck are you doing? But he knows what he's doing, and he's assessed the risk.
Yeah.
And he's doing it because he needs to do it. They're trying to put kids through education from start to finish in Somalia, Iraq and Afghanistan.
He's also got a book out.
Yeah, Citadel.
Citadel.
Available at all good bookshops and online.
Plug.
You're all doing books. Episode 10, Alexander Khan.
Oh, just 1 minute.
Yeah.
Jordan, rowing dangerously as well.
Yeah.
So he's running dangerously, and then he's going on to...
Next year.
Yeah, next year he's rowing dangerously.
Oh, right, so he...
And there's a scope to sponsor that, and I think with the amount of people that he knows now, I've got behind him, it would be a little treat for a corporate to get amongst that.
And Beth just wrote "hunted" on the screen. You might have just heard a tapping on the keys because he was fuming that he didn't mention, because he's part of the latest series and the celebrity hunted series on Channel 4. And he's like, I was like, mate, I did say twice to you at the end. Anything else? Anything else? And then after he's like, shit.
Yeah.
I didn't say hunted. So, hunted. Channel 4. Episode 10, Alexander Khan. Now, Alex's episode was kind of left field, like, not normal. I mean, it's, like, shocking, really. And we've had great feedback from it. And what I wanted to get across there, I think we did it successfully, was that one, the child abuse thing. I mean, the guy was not only the separation from his mother, but, you know, the stuff he faced from the guy, well, he said the uncle, but it wasn't the uncle. He was the stepmother's brother who beat him and all sorts and sent him off to Pakistan in the madrasa. And it is a Hollywood film to rival yours, Woody. But I have a lot of time for it, and he really wanted to put his... He didn't want anything. He didn't want his train fare, nothing. He just wanted to get his story out there to as many people. His book's out, Orphan of Islam. We give away a few copies. He signed some, sent them to me, and we got them out to other people. And it's a really, really good book. So the future is... So... We initially intended to do 10 episodes in this one, so like 11 episodes, and that was it. Create a body of work that people can use again and again and again. And we kind of uncovered, actually, there's a lot more stories to be told. There's a lot more support we can give as well. And then HESCO reached out to us, and essentially HESCO provide protective solutions around the world. That's not a plug. They actually didn't even want to be mentioned in the podcast, but it's worth saying, because this organisation, this company, has protected our guys and girls for the last 20 years in conflict, and now they want to do it more. So if it weren't for them, we wouldn't be going into season 2, and they're helping us create that, and they're also helping us create a wellness plan as well, which is coming up, and it'll be something along the lines of 45 yes or no questions, and it will give you a 16-page document how to improve your wellness, whether it's physical fitness or nutrition, and it'll be tailored to you. But more to that, and also an organisation called Bespoke Digital as well, and Steve, the owner, I know pretty well, and they're right behind creating that as well, and that'll be out in November. So we're going to do another 10 episodes, and we're looking at a couple of specials as well, and we're in talks with people at the moment about how we're gonna do that. But yeah, loads of good stuff. And we always wanted to make this about the individual. And I don't know how we'll do it with specials and things, but these episodes are so important, not to talk about a charity, but to talk about an individual within a charity. Like, we didn't speak to Walter about combat stress. We didn't speak to Louise about Little Troopers. We spoke about the individual, because it was their story that we really wanted to get out, and that again will give that support and that help and that guidance now and in the future. These conversations aren't going anywhere. So yeah, I think this is going out obviously today, and then we're gonna do in 7 days. We're gonna put episode 12 out, and then there's gonna be a pause for about 5 weeks. The reason we wanted to put episode 12 out was because there's some seriously valuable information in there. The story is incredible, and I just didn't want to sit on it. But we're going to wait for a little bit. We're going to wait for the wellness plan to be developed. We're going to get some more guests recording sorted out, and then we're going to do one a week, probably from the middle of November, for a good 9 or 10 episodes. And then we'll see how it goes. But just to kind of finish things, there's a lot of charity stuff, you know, some of the listeners and other organisations. So we've got Hague Housing at the moment. They're doing the Long Walk Home. And if I mention Hague, I'll have to mention Stoll as well. And they do a lot of good stuff with veteran housing. We've got Big Phil's Remembrance Rumble 3 in Brighton on the 9th of November. Again, Veterans in Action are doing the Veterans Expedition, and Sean Jones is a big part of that, and follow them on Twitter. Little Troopers are just piecing together their 2019 calendar, so they always need support, and buying that calendar will go a long way. Jordan's Gala Charity Ball is in the beginning of November, and there's still tickets available to that. Simon's doing a lot of work now with Bravo 22 Company. I think he's doing all the social media stuff for them, which is great. Des Fraser, who's my mate and business partner, he's doing 46 miles over the Brecon Beacon, so he's doing the Brecon Ultramarathon in a couple of months. So I hope he's out there training. I think he's doing it for combat stress. Well, he's doing it for combat stress. We've got Rich Kingston and a few of the lads from Your Skin's Waterproof. They're off to Every Space Camp, doing some stuff with Talking to Minds. My mate Gresty, he's got nothing to do with the military community, although he does all of our graphics, all of our images, does all like the episodes. So when we need a new episode, he's always on there straight away. Gets really behind us and really believes in what we're doing. He's got a book out called Ones for Sorrow, and it's a book specifically for children and for them to understand what mental health is and what good mental health is. And Charlie Martel, who's also part of Team HESCO, and next year he's rowing the Pacific solo, unsupported, 5,000 miles. And you never know, we might get to speak to Charlie in the future. But there's a lot of good stuff going on. Woody, thanks so much, mate. Episode 11. Anything else?
No, it's been a real pleasure. And talking about unsung heroes, Beth, you're a star girl. I mean, comes in here, really doesn't have to, but I think she gets it. She knows what Michael wants to achieve, and she's part of the team. And without blowing smoke up your backside, Michael, I think what you're doing is incredible. I know the listeners will agree. You've got to keep the battle river moving. You've got to keep documenting these stories, because it's making a huge difference, massive difference. So well done, you. Well done to Beth. And I look forward to listening to many more cool episodes.
We'll leave it there.